Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. On this week's show, we have a jam-packed episode, so we hope you enjoy it. So sit back, relax, grab a cold beverage, and let's talk everything there is to know in Louisiana outdoors. Guys, you hear us talk about it all the time. Our buddy Jay Thomas over at Blind Grass Camouflage Systems offers hunters and outdoorsmen the most realistic, durable, and versatile camouflage materials available on the market today. Let me ask you something. Are you tired of constantly having to rebrush your blinds every year or the smell of rotting grass in your blind? How about grass that pokes and cuts you through grass mats that have no depth in color and does not last an entire season? Well, the answer to that is probably yes, you've experienced that same scenario. And Blind Grass's patented synthetic blind grass will not rot, mildew, and is 100% waterproof. And it's available in mats or bundles, and it comes in natural gas color blends or is paintable to match your unique surroundings. Folks, do yourself a favor. If you're looking to camouflage your boat blind, kayak, permanent blind, or anything else that you're looking to blend in with your surroundings, check out our friends at Blind Grass Camouflage Systems. You can visit them on the web at blindgrass.com. This episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors Podcast is also brought to you by SRD20 Boat Products. It shouldn't be hard work. SRD20 products use advanced nanotechnologies in its formulations explicitly designed for boat maintenance. From boat waxes for detailing to waterless washing wax products, SRD20 has boat care products that keep your boat protected from the elements and looking brand new. Visit them online at www.srd20.com and enter promo code LASTSTOP for 20% off all SRD20 products today. Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome back to an all-new episode of Last Stop Waterfowl Outdoors. I'm your host, Jacob Rober, and as always, I am glad to have you here with us this week, as I'm excited, guys, because we have now officially kicked off waterfowl slash duck hunting season here in Louisiana for most of the state. We are opening up this coming weekend for the East Zone, so all of us that are in the East Zone here in Louisiana, we're going to be opening up, which is usually me. I got to be honest with you. It's usually me that's opening up, not until the East Zone opens up here in Louisiana. So this year we have a couple of differences in the way it's set up. We have an East Zone and a West Zone. And the West Zone opened up last weekend for everybody. They had the youth hunt the week before. And we talked about that a little bit on last episode, how that was going to be going down. And then this week, we have the East Zone opening up. So a lot of you boys are about ready to get things kicked off this weekend, and I think it's at a perfect time for most of y'all. So we're going to talk a little bit about the couple of hunts we made this week. We had a youth hunt that we went on. We also had a couple of other hunts down in the Western Zone that we were able to take participate in and go out and make some hunts. So we'll talk a little bit about that on this episode and a lot more. But I'm really excited this week, guys. As always, not only am I excited to have you in on the show with us this week, but I also have my normal guest, Jackson, with us this week. So I'm excited to have him on another episode. Jackson is getting way more involved with the podcast, as many of you know now, and he's enjoying this, man. So we're letting him run with it. I'm always glad to have him on. But we also have a guest with us this week that we're excited to introduce to you guys. And he's a guy that I've known for quite some time now, and we'll kind of delve into that story, how we got to know each other through the outdoors. But we have our good friend, Mr. Lee Nassar, on the show with us. So, Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Man, we are glad to finally be able to get together. Jackson, how are things going tonight for you?
Pretty good. Excited to do a podcast again.
Yeah, man, we're trying to keep it going just about every week as time allows, I guess, through hunt season. So we're trying to keep the information as fresh as we could give it to you guys. And Jackson, we had a busy week this week, man. We started out duck season, like I mentioned, and we kind of kicked things off. And you were the first one to kind of kick things off this week. So we had youth weekend in the East Zone. So we were able to go out, you and I, and tell everybody listening to the show a little bit about what we did, kind of where we went, and how it all worked out on that hunt.
Yeah, well, on the killing side of it, it didn't really work out too good because we only killed one. But I mean, we hunted a field, a flooded field that we had found, and we went to hunt it, and the birds just weren't there. They weren't there as much as we thought they were, and we only ended up killing one.
You ended up harvesting one bird, and what's funny, Lee, that's an area that we went to, and we'll go ahead and we'll talk about the name of that one because it's a lottery-only type situation for the rest of the season is the way it's going to go down. So we actually made a trip, Lee, out to South Forum, which is part of the Sherman Wildlife Management Area, and that's an area that you and I, from the early days, we have a lot of experience in that area.
So I was kind of shocked because we had talked about this the other day about I figured there wouldn't be any water there. So
there wasn't for teal season, not very much.
So the fact that it had water and there was only one bird, it kind of shocks me. That did y'all see more or did y'all just...
No, we really didn't. You know, so you talk about the water. So the situation, you remember back in the day when we used to hunt that, you know, for teal season, it was open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And that time, there were several years where they would flood the complex or they would start flooding.
Yeah.
You know, and you had Mother Nature helping it out.
And on top of it, they would pump out of the bayou, wouldn't they?
They were pumping out of the surrounding bayous, correct. And, yeah. And I actually talked to the wildlife biologist during squirrel season. We ran into him in the reserve and we started talking. I asked him a few things about South Farm and he said, where exactly is that water coming from? Because he had told me that they were pumping. He told us, yeah. Me and Jackson, he said, we're starting to pump to have it ready for big duck season, you know? And I told him, I said, well, man, with things so dry, I said, where is that water coming from? Is it coming from the bayous or where? He says, it's actually groundwater. He said, they are pumping it from the ground. They have wells in the ground that are pumping that water from the ground.
I wonder when they did that upgrade.
Man, I honestly have no idea. I don't remember that when we hunted it years ago. But if you looked at it, when they started pumping it, we went check it out, and the water coming out of that ground had that goldish kind of copper color to it.
Iron
from the
water.
Iron, you know, and the minerals that were in that water. And you were starting to see that kind of scum film kind of form on top of the water. But when we went a couple of weeks after teal season closed, that's when they started pumping it.
Okay.
And we took a ride out there, looked at things, and we ended up, Jackson, we jumped, a flock of about 40, 50 teal? In one section of the farm, and then another section we went to, there was maybe like 20 in a group, and another group of maybe about 20 or so.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty promising, you know?
Yeah.
And then fast forward, you know, we were kind of trying to wrap up baseball, all your sports, that type of stuff, so we could kind of focus on hunting season kicking up. And we didn't have a chance to really go scout those couple of weeks in between when we saw those birds. And you know better than anybody, Lee, that those birds will move in and out very quickly. And that was kind of the situation. So we go in the blind, kind of knowing the form pretty well, the layout. We knew where there was some water being pumped in. And, you know, we went ahead, we picked a spot. We had two spots, right, Jackson, that yeah. We narrowed it down to. We ended up picking one, settling on one spot. We went to that spot and just wasn't no birds anymore. They moved out is what the situation was.
You know, if you think about it, when they probably pumped in early, right?
It was about a week after teal season closed up, probably.
So you figure any farmers, you know, because there's a lot of ag fields north
there
of
is.
That. And then even going up, I guess, up through the delta, I guess you would call that. I mean, I'm sure a lot of those people started pumping water in their fields and stuff like that. Probably scattered a few birds that you had.
Yeah.
That was yep. One of the few places that had water.
Yeah.
And
that's a good point. That's a good point because you're not only competing with the water that's on the farm that we hunted, but you have other people trying to pump water mm-hmm. as best as they could. And the thing in that area, in that region, is it's a little different than pumping water from the coastal regions of the state because a lot of those guys can't pump water in this season. We had Mr. Colby Fitch with Cajun Country Waterfowl on an episode with us about a month or two ago. And he was talking, he said, man, he said, a lot of the guys can't pump water because they're pumping it from the coastline, he said, and it's got too much salinity in
it. So it's killing their rice and whatever.
Yeah, they can't pump
planted.
It. He said, so they're relying on groundwater like South Farm was,
mm-hmm.
Or if they're lucky enough to have a local bayou in their area, you know?
And you think anybody who's close enough to the river, I mean, I actually saw a post on an area that I hunt for deer. family was out there fishing in the Mississippi River and actually caught a flounder. I mean, that's past
Baton Rouge. In the Mississippi River?
In the Mississippi River.
And look how many sharks they're catching this year. In the Chaffalot, the Mississippi River, all the river systems, they're catching a good bit of sharks this year. So that tells me that they're moving up, you know, from areas that they typically not, you know, or their natural habitat and moving up into areas that's, you know, not real common for them.
I mean, it's record low. I mean, yes,
it is.
For us.
It is. And we'll talk about that, too, because we visited that. But, you know, an area that we hunted, that we hunt every year that you're real familiar with, that we took a look at and we've been trying to monitor, you know, and just things aren't. We're probably not going to be able to hunt it this year, to be honest with you, you know. So it's just, it is what it is. Mother Nature dealt us a kind of a cruel hand this year when it comes to that. But it may be a blessing in other areas. We may just have to stay mobile, you know.
And then just to throw something in on that. So, back in, I guess this might have been 2009, 2010. I remember it was a record low year, and I wasn't living down here at that point. I had moved off for college, and I was hunting up in North Louisiana, and there was no water.
No water. Yeah.
I mean, the guys that I knew that I had met up there that had family had rice fields, or you know, they hunted in the area.
Yeah.
They had nothing. I mean, I was hunting a bar pit along the Ouachita River, and areas that they would tell me that would be, like, normally flooded. I mean, nothing. There was nothing. And the bird, if you did have a hole, I mean, it could be 4 inches. There were birds. I mean,
you had birds in it.
I shot me. Well, the first day I went by myself, and I could have limited it out in about 30 minutes. The fog was so bad. Well, the next 4 times we go, I mean, we wore this hole out.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was a 3-man limit. I mean, it was a mixed bag, 3-man limit. Until December, January rolled around, and it really rained a lot. The Ouachita River came up and flooded. But before that, those guys were struggling. You know, people that were hunting around me were killing.
Yeah, and that's a good point you bring up, because I remember those years, and I remember North Louisiana really struggling without water. Jackson, you too young to remember that at that time, because you were just born not long. But yeah, we went through a drought similar to what we're seeing here in South Louisiana this year. And that's good to know, because yeah, a couple of things, and we'll talk about this also in this episode, a couple of things we saw on some hunts this week that kind of surprised me at first, but then when I thought about it, I was like, okay, it makes a little bit of sense. But before we get into that, I kind of want to delve. Now, Lee, guys, those of you who are listening to the podcast here, you have to understand, Lee is one of the original OGs of the Last Stop Waterfowl crew. And what I mean by that is, you know how it is when you have your core group of guys that you kind of, you meet through hunting, you meet through, you know, that has an interest in the outdoors, and you kind of share a lot of same likes and interests in outdoors, and then you start kind of making a few hunts together. That was our situation when we met, Lee. And you know, you kind of form that bond to where you're like, hey, I could trust that guy to not go run his mouth and tell everybody where we hunting at, or hey, we work really well together when we do hunt. So you kind of get that core group of guys, and that's what we did. And when I say the Last Stop Waterfowl crew, that was the concept that the name I had kind of came up with at one point for the group, because people said, well, why y'all call it Last Stop Waterfowl? I said, well, we in Louisiana, we're the last stop in the migration, man, most of the time, you know. So we down at the bottom of the boot. And we see the last of the birds pretty much coming through by all the ones that haven't been shot and killed up the flyways. And that's kind of where the whole concept came. But I call you one of the OGs because you were part of the group that I hunted with back then when we started doing all this. And you and I met through Cabela's. I think that's where it was. We had all worked, you and another friend of ours, Casey Miet, Dustin Jumanville. And I think that was the original core crew of guys that we hunted together, pretty much.
It was us four, pretty much.
And we were public land warriors, man, just like Jackson and I am now and the buddies I hunt with now. And you know, over time just takes its toll, and people get married, people get real jobs. I think some of you guys were in school at the time, you know. But let's talk about some of those early days. What's some of those things that you remember from when we originally met each other as a group of guys, hung together, and you know, how all that went down back then.
So, as far as, like, how me and Dustin and Casey started
going out there? Yeah, y'all three were friends from high school, correct?
Yeah, so.
And then I came along meeting y'all through work.
Yeah, so me and Dustin had known each other since, I mean, preschool. I mean, we've known each other since we were probably 4 years old, 5 years old. And Dustin always hunted, right? But he was, you know, when you're young, you go with your dad and your brother and you know, whoever. When we got a little older, we could drive around, and me and Dustin were actually, Dustin was part of Jimmy Boyce.
Yeah, but, right here out of Sorrento.
So we were kind of interested in duck hunting, right? Because my family didn't duck hunt anymore because of stuff with Marpaw Swamp, and they were rabbit hunters and deer hunters, right?
Yeah.
So I was interested in it. Dustin was interested in it, and we had access to Jimmy Boyce.
Yeah.
So he brought me on a pipeline, and we killed a few mallards, had a good hunt, and I mean we were hooked. Well, later on, this was probably another year or so. Me and Casey played baseball together, and we were friends, but we weren't real close at the point. And then I got a truck, and Casey didn't have a truck, so I drove him around everywhere.
There you go.
And I mean, every day I would go to his house, pick him up. We'd go to baseball. I'd bring him to Subway. I mean, whatever he wanted to do, right? Because he couldn't get anywhere.
Correct. You were his chauffeur.
I was his chauffeur. I mean, he never even gave me gas money. I hope he listens to this.
Well, anybody knows Casey knows that probably.
Yeah, he's not giving you much. But he'll come help you.
He'll come help you. He's a good old guy.
But so, you know, that goes on. We're working at Cabela's, and the guy we were working with, he came from Bowie's. And we're trying to find a place to duck hunt. And he's like, man, you ought to go to Sherburne. And we look, what's Sherburne?
Sherburne Wildlife Management Area.
Yeah, so this guy, you know, tells us what to do. Is a walk-in trail. If we go out there, there's a walk-in trail. I think Dustin or Casey or somebody shot a big old mallard off the walk-in trail. We were all excited, right? Went there probably another 8 times. I don't think we killed a bird. I think somebody almost shot an owl one time, and we had to knock the gun out of their hand before they, you know.
Before they got arrested.
Yeah. So that's kind of how that started, and I think Dustin got a real job. Me and Casey were still in school. Dustin went and bought a boat.
Yep.
And then at the time, we had met you, you know, through Cabela's.
I think y'all were working at Cabela's at the time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
Or you were, and Dustin was. Yeah, and that's how we kind of all met.
And Dustin loved you. Like, Dustin used to talk about you all the time.
Really?
And Jacob's, yeah, he'd be like, he's an awesome guy. And I didn't know you duck hunted, right?
Yeah.
And I was still kind of deer hunting with my dad, duck hunting and stuff. And so we go out there, so Dustin gets this boat. And we had a friend that had hunted there every now and then, and he told us about a hole out there. I don't know if you want me to name it.
And
number.
This is still Sherburne?
This is Sherburne.
Yeah, Sherburne.
Off of Happy Town.
Yeah.
120, right?
Yeah. Very famous area of the reserve. Everybody knows that.
So he tells us about this hole, and all right, we're going to find it. We're going to find it that morning. So we get out there as a boat park already. And this is before the line and all that other stuff.
This is when you used to be able to park back at the launch.
Yeah, so these people. So we pull up, and we see this truck. We're like, maybe they're not in this hole. So we run through the swamp, and it was 14A.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So we're running through the swamp. We get to the end of the run. There's a big log. And Dustin had this old Gold Devil. He didn't change the belt on the service drive, nothing. He just bought it. We bolted it on, and we went.
Yeah, typical like, first boat type buy situation.
Right. So we get to this log, and all I hear is Dustin go, oh, crap. You know, big bump. I'm in the front holding the light. I look back, and there, you know, him and Casey's back there like, oh, man, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I'm like, do I need to look back? Dustin's like, nope. So what's wrong? He said, well, it'll crank, but it won't go. What do you mean?
So the motor was running, but y'all wasn't going for nowhere. The belt.
And we hung up on this log, and I'm looking, and they got two guys shining a light at us. And I'm like, well, I guess we can either go talk to these guys, or we can push it in the slough.
Yeah.
Like, we'll just tell them, hey, give us a ride out of here. You know,
yeah, go ahead and make a hunt, and maybe hitch a ride out.
So I pull us off the log. Me and Casey pull us off the log, and Dustin's rocking, right? And we walk over there to him, like, hey, man, look, you know, we broke down. Look, we'll go push ourselves in the slough. Or to run and y'all hunt when y'all get done hunting, you know, just pull us out, please, if you don't mind. Oh, man, y'all come hunt with us. Y'all got decoys, throw them out. They already had 5 dozen decoys out in this hole.
And this is they were in 14A, the hole y'all were trying to get to? Yeah, so those of you who know that area, you know that 14A is not a big hole. No. Jackson, you know that. You've been to 14A. Not a big hole at all. 5 dozen decoys plus them telling y'all to put some more in there, that don't leave much land in there for them birds to come in there.
We throw down probably another 4 dozen decoys, 3 dozen decoys. So we didn't know, you know, we didn't know how big the hole was. We didn't know anything about it. We let it on a map.
Correct.
Right? So we get in there, And we get behind him, we tie off, and these two boys is from around Church Point, Lafayette, somewhere in that area. And we get talking, nice guys, right? And these birds start coming in. And that was probably one of the funnest hunts I've ever had in my entire life.
And this was, just to clarify this, this was the first hunt with the boat.
With the boat.
That y'all had made over there. Kind of going in blind.
Five-man limit,
first hunt.
In Sherman.
That'll get you hooked.
Oh, we were done. We was already hooked. We were really hooked.
You were done at that point, huh?
Oh, we wore that hole out. Like, we didn't know what resting a hole was. We didn't know what taking a break was. I mean, we hunted.
Yeah.
Right? And
you learning on the fly.
Oh, yeah.
In that situation.
Previous to that, the only duck hunt I made was on that pipeline, and my dad had pulled me in a P-Row back of Marpaw one time, like, back in the 90s. It was me, him, my brother, and a guy that he worked with.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was ridiculous, right?
Yeah, it was good. So you got to hunt back then when it was good?
I was 7 years old.
You don't remember.
So I didn't do anything. I just sat in a boat.
Gotcha.
So I was learning on the fly.
Correct. So y'all go in there, first hunt, you kill a 5-man limit of birds on public land. Never been in there before. Get you hooked. You remember what y'all killed that day? What kind of species y'all were?
We had a mixed bag. We had wood duck, teal, mallards. I think we might have had a handful of grays.
Yep.
But the majority of the bag was wood duck, teal, and mallards.
Good ducks.
It was
what we consider good ducks here in Louisiana.
We might have had a spoonbill. We had one spoonbill.
A spooning? Yeah.
One spoonbill.
Yep. That area, it's funny you say that, because in that area, I've killed several spoonies over the years in that area. And but all those species you talk about, that's typically what you kill in that area.
And to even bring it back further than that, I can remember a walk-in hunt me and Casey made by ourselves that I completely messed up and he completely messed up. And this is a funny one. So we walk off the back of the nature trail. Water was kind of low. Go in the back, there's a little hole off to the right. And we're sitting in the shuck grass, and we don't see a bird all morning. It's 10 o'clock. I got a little Debbie in the bag hanging up on a tree. And Casey's got to go to the bathroom, right? So I look at Casey and say, man, when you go to the bathroom, grab that little Debbie. And we'll hunt for another 30 minutes, an hour, we'll go home, right? And this is when I really learned something. You know, this was very, very early. So I'm sitting there in the shuck grass, and all of a sudden I hear,
you hear them wings.
And about 15 to 20 gray ducks just light right in front of me. They light, they land, they bunch up. And I'm not going to lie to anybody. I was water swapping, right? Like, he was in the woods with his pants down.
Hell yeah.
And I'm out there by myself. I didn't hit a single bird.
So you opened up on them three shots and you didn't hit nothing?
I lined three of them up and I shot right over the top of them three. And then I shot two more shots and never even cut a feather.
And there they go out of there. But honestly, we've all been there before. Everybody's done that before. But it hurts. That definitely hurts you whenever that happens. That's for sure. So did y'all have anything else come in that morning? That you remember? Y'all ended up scratching it?
I think we stayed another 2 hours hoping some more birds would come in. And
nothing.
But I did learn something.
What's that?
You don't leave early. If anything, you get there late and you hunt when everybody else is leaving.
So why? Kind of elaborate on that a little bit. What's your opinion? Because everybody has opinions on that. Jackson, tell him about the man in Marksville that we ran into. What he told you. You've told that story before. But Jackson does an impersonation of this man. So, we meet this guy in Spring Bayou Wildlife Management Area up in Marksville, Louisiana, years ago. And this, just to paint the picture for you guys, then I'll let Jackson, you tell us the rest of it. But this guy is out in the middle of one of the main channels runs, okay? Now, it's not real deep in this WMA. It's probably 6 to 8 foot deep at the deepest, you know? So, he's out there in the middle of the channel. He's duck hunting, and there is decoys. Everywhere around this man's blind, and he is, loaded up, and it's late. We had already made our hunt, and we come out and we talk to this guy, and Jackson, you tell him how that went down, the guy, what he told you.
He said, from 11 to 2, the mallards just piling.
And that's how he sounded, man. He told Jackson, he said, listen here, young man. He said, from 11 to 2. Is when you got to be sitting in that blind. He said, because them mallards, he said, them big ducks pile into here. He said, I can't tell you how many times I've sat here at that time in the daytime. He said, and I round out my limit at that time.
And I believe it, 100%.
So what you were saying, you learned something there staying late. What's your reasoning behind that?
And it's not just ducks. It's everything except for maybe rabbits, right?
Okay.
So, from what I can tell, and this is from deer hunting, squirrel hunting, I don't turkey hunt, right? Duck hunting. Typically, like, I gave you an example on the squirrels, right? Big fox squirrels, yeah, they'll feed early in the morning. And they'll haul, right? And you get into December and they start start breeding and stuff. And they'll be moving. You catch them early, right?
Yep.
But 9 o'clock, and even my dad's always told me this, and what we've noticed, right? You kill more squirrels, or we always kill more squirrels from 9 to 10 than any other time, right? You kill them early, but we kill more from 9 to 10 than any other time. Usually we finish our limit out. Kill 3 or 4.
9 or 10 o'clock.
Boom.
Yeah. And I'm a squirrel hunter. I've been a squirrel hunter my whole life, and I've never, some mornings I never really noticed that, but some mornings you do kill them later, you know? But it's funny you say that because just today I was at a friend of mine's house. I went over there to pick up, I'd hunted with him this week and I forgot my waders in his truck. So I called him and said, hey, I'm going to run by at lunchtime today, come pick up my waders, get them out of the truck. He says, yeah, no problem. So we go over there and we're standing up against the truck kind of talking about our hunt this week. And we're watching a squirrel, fox squirrel, in the yard. And he says, you know what's crazy about fox squirrels? He said, I noticed. He says, they don't move in the morning. He said, real early, whenever the rest of them are usually moving. He said, they end up coming. He says, I see that squirrel all the time, and he's moving mid-morning to midday. Mm-hmm. He said, that's when he typically moves. He said, but the cat squirrels and the gray squirrels, he said, they'll move in the morning early and late in the evening.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's funny. It's ironic you here talking about that as we record tonight, because he said the exact same thing.
So, like on the deer. Right? I've shot, and I've seen more deer. I'm not going to say I've shot more deer. I've seen more deer between, and depending on the time of the year, right?
Yeah,
even early in the year, though, it's like this. Between, I would say, I've killed the majority of my deer between probably 10 and 12:30 in the daytime. Now, I'm not going to say I haven't seen them and killed them earlier or later.
Yeah.
But, and especially a buck. I've killed more bucks in that time frame. And I've got some reasons behind that, just like the squirrel and the ducks. And I got a really big opinion on the duck thing as far as why they get out of the fields later or off the coast. I think a lot of them birds, especially in our area, right, they'll be on the coast, all right? Or they'll be in a big field of rice or a big field of soybean, whatever's planted, and they go feed early. I wholeheartedly believe they're in there feeding early, right? And I think a few things happen. If you look at like a moon chart of when the moon rises and sets in the just based off of, chart. Like I bought a farmer's almanac for next year today. Actually, I seen one. I've been looking for one. I couldn't find it.
Correct.
But there's sites on the internet that you can look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, it shows all that information.
Typically, when that moon rises an hour before, an hour after, and then when that moon sets an hour before, an hour after, I see more activity. And you can even, if you just pay attention, you'll see the birds come to life in the woods, like even just like a regular, like a cardinal or a robin or something like that. They start singing.
Start moving.
And I think a lot of that, I think that moon has a lot to do with how animals.
There's no doubt about it. I believe in the moon phase stuff, because you could just tell, you'll see different activity, like you mentioned, with, with that moon, depending on what it's doing at that time. So, and fishing. Fishing's the same way, when you see those old men that look at the old moon phases and stuff like that, and they telling you the high feeding times and the best feeding periods and all that, and a lot of times that does correlate to success.
And then on top of that, there's a period in between, right, where you're directly in between it.
Yes.
Where it seems like it kind of peaks. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that is, but you might be looking at 30 minutes, right? I'm saying an hour either or. But it might be an hour before and nothing after. Or it might be an hour after and nothing before the rise, let's just say.
Yeah, correct.
And then there's a peak in the middle where they'll kind of, get a little active, but it's short. and then it just it slows down. It slows down.
I agree with you 100% on. I think a lot of people that follow that would agree with that too, and it does make a difference. And then Jackson, that's something for y'all, a younger age group. That's something to take note of when you're talking to some older hunters like that that have a lot of experience. And you know, looking at the moon phases, looking at all that stuff, trust me, it will make a big difference in all the hunting that you do throughout the season. So, I agree with you, Lee. I believe in that big time. So, there's no doubt about it. So, we kind of bounced back. We went to the youth hunt like we were talking about that. We kind of opened up this weekend with a youth duck hunt, Jackson. Didn't go that great. Didn't have as many birds as we thought. Well, then the next day, we gone. I'm headed down. So, I did some traveling this week, Lee. I usually don't open like I talked about duck season until the E-Zone opens up. But I ended up pretty much going and hunting the coastals, or what we call the West Zone this year, this week. So when we finished that youth hunt on Saturday, that was the youth hunt, Sunday, went down the coast, went down to the saltwater marshes, made a hunt over there with one of my good friends, Mr. Michael Lynn. We went down there, me and him, and hunted together. And we I didn't know that area that we hunted. I'm not going to say the specific area, but I didn't know it real well. But he had some experience down there. So he said, "Hey, I know a couple of holes. I checked them, you know, a while back," he said, "and, looked like they had a few birds showing up," he said. "So let's go try to hit this up." The wind was blowing. This rain was scheduled to come through this week. And we went down there and there was a lot of birds, typical day. And y'all could both relate to this. A lot of high-flying groups of birds migrating, it looked like, you know, for the most part. Wind was pumping. That was really good. But I noticed that the pond we were in, and I want to touch on this a little bit in a second, is that they didn't have any grass in this pond that we hunted down in the marsh. And he told me, he said, "This isn't characteristic of this pond." He said, "Well, it's usually loaded with grass year after year." He said, "Even when the hurricanes hit, we still had grass in this pond come duck season." He said, "I've always done really well in this pond." Well, this year, there's no grass in the pond. Well, we ended up killing two birds on that day, okay? The only two birds that came in on us pretty much is what we shot that day. We had a Drake green wing tail and a Drake blue wing tail. Shot that. But I noticed that, and I asked him, I said, "There's no grass in the pond." I said, "Is that characteristic?" And that's when he told me all that. Mm-hmm. He says, "No, usually there's a lot of grass." So I started, as we were leaving that day, we bounced into a couple of ponds to look at, you know, for going back in future reference. And none of those ponds were holding grass in those ponds that typically hold grass. So it kind of hit me then and there. I was like, wait a second. I said, okay, this is what I was thinking. And I think a lot of us looking at this year in a drought season, we were looking at, okay, if you got water, you're going to have birds. Mm-hmm. But what I'm realizing this week is that's not the case necessarily. I'm going to say this. If you got water and ponds with grass in them, you're probably going to have birds. What you think about that assessment, Jackson, that opinion?
You got that widgeon grass, you're probably going to have birds.
Yeah, widgeon grass, any kind of duck food, any kind of that vegetation that they're going to key in on, which is always the way it is, typically. If you find the grass, you find the water, you're going to find the ducks. They're going to show up at some point, typically throughout the season. Well, these areas that don't have grass in them, why don't they have grass? That's the next thing I started talking about, you know, asking myself. And me and Mike had that conversation. And he said, well, we had a drought this year, obviously. And, you know, with the drought, with there being no fresh water pumping into the saltwater marshes from rain and Mother Nature, the salinity levels shot up is what's going on. So the salinity levels are up in these brackish / you know, saltwater ponds, and it's killed the grass, is what it's doing.
What was this place again?
Without saying the name of it, it was down south on the coast, going down below home, all that area. Yeah, okay. On the eastern side, eastern side.
So what wind did you have most of the year this year? You had a west wind, wind.
Yeah, for the most part, we had some north winds this week when this little front started blowing. Now, this is this week I was hunting. So when this little rain came through, we had some north winds, but it was northwest a lot of times.
Talking about like in the summertime.
Oh, in the summertime. Yeah. West winds.
You had a west wind all summer, which we typically have a southeast wind or a south wind.
Correct. This summer was a lot of west winds.
So a lot of your ponds didn't have water in them, I'm assuming. I mean, I'm not sure about down there. I know in this area.
Yeah.
So a lot of your water would have been blown out in this area going back toward New Orleans, right?
Yeah, here in this area, that's the case.
So if you got a west wind or a east wind, I'm just going to assume that they didn't have a whole lot of water in a lot of them ponds. Maybe.
It could be. That is something that could have happened. We started looking, and I researched it this week when I got back, and this is something that I found very interesting, is there is a very fine line between how much salt or salinity, let's just say that salinity level has to be at the perfect level for it to be able to not kill off the vegetation. In other words, you have to have enough fresh water, the perfect amount of fresh water to grow it.
Mm-hmm.
But then too much salinity kills it. And those two got to balance out. Those two sides got to balance out.
So you didn't have any rain.
No fresh water pumping in throughout the summertime because we've been in this big drought. And the salinity level rose. And therefore, it was too great for the vegetation to survive. And it kills it off.
And all your outlets coming off the Chaffalot and Mississippi probably wouldn't flowing like they normally flow.
Might not be. In those areas, it may not be affecting it as much where we were down there in those areas, you know.
Yeah.
I would think that it probably doesn't affect it as much down there. But what those areas, in my opinion, and from the research I see, is that Mother Nature is the fresh water that balances out from the rain. You don't get that, the salinity level's too high, therefore you don't have the vegetation. So all these ponds that typically hold grass, I've seen this week, didn't hold grass anymore right now. Therefore, no birds showing up in those ponds. The ponds that do have grass in certain areas are holding the birds. So we left there. We had two birds that we killed. That was on Sunday. Monday, I was off of work. I hooked up with another buddy of mine that we hunt together quite a bit nowadays. And we went over to the marsh again. We went to a different area, obviously. We went more east on this end of the state. And we ended up making a hunt. Now, it was a day very overcast like it's been the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. We had a good wind pumping out of the northwest is where it was pumping out of, okay, when we got there. Conditions were pretty good. Overall, I like that type of day for duck hunting. Those dreary days, kind mm-hmm. of a little misty rain going on, that type of stuff. So we get there, we set up in the blind in this area, and this is a spot we hunted during till season one time, but also hunted last season several times with a lot of success in those areas. They have grass in this pond, so that's a good thing. So we sitting there, we get there, daylight breaks, and for the first hourly, we didn't shoot hour to hour and a half. We didn't fire a shot. We didn't have a duck come into the pond. We didn't have nothing. And they had guys banging around us, you know, not too far from us. And I'm saying to myself, damn, we just ain't on the X this morning, you know. But we didn't panic, you know. And what's funny is neither one of us said anything. You know how you get in the blind in those mornings. Jackson, you'll attest to this too. You get in that blind, and man, it's daybreak, and you're expecting that first flight of birds,
yeah.
And there ain't nothing. The first thing you're thinking of is, man, this ain't going to be today, you know. Uh-huh. This ain't going to be it. We're going to see dead skies today, apparently. So I was thinking it. I'll be honest with you. I was thinking that. But I'm like, man, it's the marsh. You know, in the marsh, you're typically going to have something dumb enough to come in, dropping your decoys. You're going to get some probably oddball species that you don't normally kill necessarily. Yeah. It's going to drop in the decoys, and you're going to be able to get it's not often you're going to scratch, is what I'm trying to say, you know. So I'm kind of holding out. I'm like, okay, the goal is just don't scratch. You know, we're an hour to an hour and a half in, and we ain't shot a bird. Ain't seen a bird, you know. So the wind kind of shifted more out of the north. We started getting a drizzle, like more of a steady drizzle. And then all of a sudden, gray duck comes in, okay? Uh-huh. And then we go ahead and we shoot the gray duck. We get the gray duck. Then here comes, a little bit later, a pair of them comes in. Boom, boom, we kill them, you know? And it wasn't a perfect hunt by any means. We didn't have a perfect hunt. We didn't shoot the greatest.
So about what time was it?
This was, okay, so legal shooting time was about 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Just before 6 o'clock. So you're looking probably 7:30, 7:45 when we killed the first duck.
Okay.
You know, somewhere in there. A gadwall came in. We got that one. That was about at that point. But it was right when that wind shifted. And then all of a sudden, we started seeing birds in the air, like groups high. Gadwall. It was gadwall that showed up. And you could hear him, Lee. You know how it is.
Yeah.
Meh, 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 meh. You could hear them kind of doing their thing. And I told I told my buddy, I said, man, I said, it looks like it's picking up a little bit, huh? He says, yeah. He says, it looks like it's picking up if we could just get them lower. Because they were up high, you know, they were kind of just moving around. And we call Adam, and they were on their way somewhere. You know how that goes. They were just moving around. And then all of a sudden, about 20 minutes later, man, we get another pair come in. We shoot them, you know, get them. And then we're noticing that they're kind of dropping. All the birds we're seeing are a little bit lower, a little bit lower. And we ended up grinding that hunt out on Monday. It took us to about 10:30, 10:45. You know, kind of like you were talking about a little later in the morning. And we ended up getting the two-man limit on Monday.
So did y'all open up to see what these ducks were feeding on?
We did. Did y'all open them up? I did not, no. I did not, and I probably should have. By the time I got home, I'll be honest with you, I had work the next day. So yeah. I was trying to get them cleaned up and, you know, get them processed and get them going. But no, I didn't. I ended up breasting them is what I did, you know, to kind of get them out and get them cleaned up. But you're right. That's a good point. That should check what they eat, you know, that type of stuff.
Because that might have been rice-filled ducks, right? Getting them up and just looking for somewhere just to kind of rest in the marsh. Because if you say there's not as much feed in the marsh as there has been, right?
Now, this is different marshes we're talking about
but
that we own.
In general.
But in general, yes. From what I saw so far this week. And if you're listening right now, you may be disagreeing with me on that, you know? But I could guarantee you that if you hunted this past weekend, and I would be willing to bet this, that if you typically got grass in your pond and this year you don't have grass in your pond, you probably did not have as successful of a hunt as you normally do. I would just be willing to bet that, hunters.
I would agree with that because even if you have grass in the pond, I mean, it's like me and you, right? You go to the fridge. You don't want to eat the same thing every day. So
that's exactly right.
So, yeah, and probably some birds or some animals, they might prefer, you know, eating natural grass. Some might prefer eating rice, corn.
But my thing was we caught the migration that day when it happened. Like, we caught a push is what we did. You know, to not have no birds and then to go to a two-man limit by just waiting it out. Mm-hmm. Weather shifted a little bit. Rain started coming down. Those birds literally moved in while we were there on Monday.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that because, I mean, I saw it. We witnessed it, you know. So I think, like, to add to your point that you made a while ago of waiting it out, staying a little bit later. Look, there's a million times you've heard that coming up duck hunting. And then you do it and you don't have success. Right, Jackson? You've been through that before.
Yeah.
But, hey, we're going to wait it out and you know, they'll show up late, hopefully, and they don't, you know?
Yeah.
But there are days when it's the opposite, and it does happen. And that was a prime example on Monday of, hey, if we would have just said, you know, at 8 o'clock or 8:15, said, man, there ain't nothing flying. Let's get out of here. Let's go have breakfast at the Waffle House. Then, you know, we would have came back with our tails tucked between our legs and scratched, you know? Yeah. But we just... Neither one of us said anything to each other, you know, although I was thinking, and I'm sure he was, you know, hey, this ain't starting out too good, but we know we're in the right area. We know we have the food source that these birds want. They had, on opening morning, they had some success there, you know, because I hadn't got to hunt with them on opening morning, but they had some success there. There was birds in the area those 2 days before when they hunted it. Unless everything moved out, I knew that if we held out, we had a chance to at least kill something, you know? And that's what ended up happening.
So, I just wanted to look this up since I got it. So, I looked at the moon chart, right? So, the rise was at 6:40. Okay, so that had been right at shooting time, right?
Yeah, 40 minutes after.
So, if you're looking at another 2 hours, you said you hunted till about 9, 10 o'clock.
Yeah, it was 10:45, 11 o'clock almost.
You had a front, right?
Yep.
And you said early in the morning people were shooting around y'all.
They had some people shooting, not too, like it was in a different area of the reserve where we were, but yeah.
You might have had a combination of everything that you needed to get them birds up and moving up front.
That probably had a lot. That's a good point. They probably had a lot to do with it too. We were quiet where we were. We didn't shoot. We didn't see a lot. They were pounding on one end of the reserve. Probably got a lot of them birds in the area up too.
A front roll was rolling through.
Coming through also.
Yep.
Because you could tell, you know, those days where it's the migrators. You know, they're up high, they're in the stratosphere, and they're moving. You call to them, it don't matter what you do. They're not coming. You know, they're on a mission. They're going somewhere, and they're going. That's where it's happening.
Yeah.
We saw that. We saw that happening, but then we also gradually saw that ceiling start dropping on those boats. They were coming down more and more and more. Next thing we know, they in the spread. We working them over the hole, you know? So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a good point you make, is that it was a perfect combination. You caught it during a migrational period. You probably had some pressure on the other end of the reserve. They kept the birds moving. That's one good thing about public land hunting, you know?
Yeah, you got somebody.
You keep them birds moving sometimes, you know?
Some people hunt till 7:30 and they get in the boat and they ride, you know?
That's another thing. That happens from time to time. But you brought up a very good point, especially for you young hunters. You guys who are getting into the sport, or, you know, you're trying to learn the ropes of it. Stay and hold out, man. Too many times, and Lee, you'll see that you could agree with this, and Jackson, you've seen it. Too many times we have guys that you see, okay, the first hour after that first initial flight, you know, quote unquote, there's no birds, and they ready to roll out. Like I said, let's go to the Waffle House.
We used to hunt one.
Dustin, and I know who you're talking about. Dustin was a good example of that, and that's no hatred being thrown towards him, but that was true. Dustin was impatient. Now, Dustin's a good hunter. Yeah. I'm not saying that he is not a good hunter. He is a great hunter, actually.
And I think he's gotten a lot better with
it. Yeah, oh, yeah.
He has. In fact, I know he has.
Yeah, he definitely has. And look, we talked about you guys were young men getting into the sport whenever this first started, as us all hung together. And everybody goes through learning periods. Mm-hmm. But at that time, he was the one in the group that if we didn't shoot at daylight, he was like, let's roll.
Yep.
You know? And a lot of times he was the first one, like you said, with a mud boat and had access to the boat. So we all with him. And we're not wanting to leave, and he's wanting to leave. And you end up, you can't say a whole lot, you know? Yeah, you got to go with the flow in that situation. But too many times I see hunters leave. You know, now, it's one thing if you got work or you got an obligation, you got to make that type of stuff. Hey, that happens.
But if you don't have anything going on, they give you till 12, 2 o'clock in some of these areas.
Yes, 1, 2 o'clock in most WMAs in Louisiana.
Might as well make it worth your while. You're already out there.
Might as well make it worth it, you know. And me, you know, people ask me, like, I talked about this on last week's episode, Jackson. I was talking to him. He was asking me questions. I said, it's with social media, it's changed things, too, because it's so much of a bragging deal for a guy to hop on, and I made a stupid joke about it. I said shooting times at 6 o'clock, and they got first guy posting on social media limits by 6:08. You know, and you know, like, great.
You can't load your gun that fast.
No, I mean, I was like, great, man, but I don't want my experience to be that quick. You know, look, do I want to kill a limit? Hell yeah, I'd love to kill a limit. Jackson wants to, you want to, whoever. But it's also about the experience, you know?
It is.
So all the work that we do to set up, wake up early on public land and all that, to if I was done in 8 minutes, which I've never been done that quick, be honest with you, there would be a little bit of disappointment probably for me.
I think the fastest hunt I've ever had was a teal hunt, and I think it lasted all of 45 minutes. And it was kind of, it was fun, right? I'm not going to say it wasn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it was kind of like, well, what am I going to do the rest of the day?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
that's a good point. You know, like me, I just enjoy being out there. Now, I don't want to be out there and see dead skies. I want some action.
Yeah.
You know, but if I could kind of have, like, even though we hunted late Tuesday or Monday, it was a slow trickle in. Like, it was a bird here, a bird there, two birds here.
Kept you interested.
It kept us interested. It kept us on our toes, you know? Now, Jackson, you kind of went to say something right there. You look at it from a different perspective, it sounds like. What's your thoughts on it?
I'd like to be done at 6:08.
You like to be done at 6:08?
I mean, I'll just stay there and watch them after that.
So you all about, hey, let's kill the limit, and then we'll just stay here and watch them after
I'll
that.
I'll just stay there and film them after.
That's a good point. Right. I guess that's a good point, you know?
But he's still doing something he's enjoying.
He's still out there watching. You're still getting that enjoyment that I'm talking about. You just go ahead and knock that limit out of the way first, you know?
He's getting the hunting part out.
I can't blame that man for that, you know?
And another thing, like, even if you do hunt right and you end your hunt early and you're not ready to go, I mean, I guess you can go walk around. You can go look. So that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you learn a lot. I mean, that's how you learn. It's going.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And that's another point you bring up that I had a conversation with a guy this week. He says, I hunt with a guy. He says, but he almost enjoys scouting more than he likes to hunt. He said, like, I can't get him to actually hunt. He said all he wants to do is scout for the hunt. He said, but we never actually hunt.
But that's what he enjoys.
And that's what he enjoys. And I get that. But I could also see the other guy being frustrated in the fact that, hey, I'm going on a hunt with you. Let's go kill something, you know, and let's have some fun hunting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can see both sides of it. You know?
That's how I kind of am. I'm kind of interested in finding them more than killing them sometimes.
Are you?
I like finding new places.
Me too. That still drives
it's me. It's an adventure every time you go, right? It's what I'm going to come around next. And some of that's got to do, and you probably like this, because that's kind of how I was when I first started out, was I was always looking for something better.
Yes.
Right? But sometimes there isn't anything better. Sometimes there is. I mean, a lot of times there
is. That's a good point.
But sometimes... Sometimes you just got to kind of sit back and you got to, you know, look and say, that's nice, but maybe not today, right?
Yes. You know, what I got and what I know is maybe the old reliable.
Patience.
Yeah.
There's just something about, like you go and find a spot that has birds and then killing them the next day that you feel like that. You know that you found that spot and you know you killed them because you found that spot.
100%.
Yeah.
There's nothing more rewarding in my... And that's what I love about public land hunting still. And I talked about last week, you know, some of the reasons I still drive. I'm a 40... On last week's episode, Lee, we were talking about Jackson kind of flipped the roles. He asked me some questions. And, you know, at 44 years old, I'm still public land hunting, and people ask me, they say, man, you still got the urge to go do that? You said it a while ago before we got on air. You said, out of our group, you're the only one that's still duck hunting religiously, you know?
You are.
You know? And it's not that y'all don't want to hunt. The original guys that we had, it's just that we all kind of do our own thing a little bit now, you know?
You know, some of us, you know, life changed for some of us, you know? You know, Dustin, he had two kids, and... He kind of was like, I'm a deer hunt. You know, it's a little easier. I know what it is. It's easier for him to get his kid out there. And he likes to deer hunt. Casey works a lot.
Yeah.
Casey works a lot. And Casey spends a lot of time with his future wife and his future son.
Yeah.
Which there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, family obligations,
man. In fact, Casey asked me a while back, but I'm going to be working all next week if I wanted to hunt. He was going to get out and, you know, I think make a squirrel hunt, go stalk some rabbits.
Yeah.
So I know he still wants to do it.
The fire's still there.
And then me, I moved around. Like, I mean, I moved to North Louisiana twice. I moved to Texas once.
Yeah, you did. And that's something that I want to ask you about, actually. Like, so you talked about a little history of hunting down here, how you got started on waterfowl hunting, and then eventually work took you to North Louisiana, correct?
South Arkansas.
But
I was living in North Louisiana.
So talk a little bit about that, because your hunting and fishing passion, you carried that with you up there to North Louisiana. How different was North Louisiana than South Louisiana? And talk a little bit about that.
So, I mean, I fished a whole lot more up there than I did hunting, right? But I'm not going to say I didn't go. I picked my spots a little bit better, right? I would go with some people that kind of knew the area I was working with. What I learned or what I saw up there compared to, you know, down here, one, even being around not maybe an hour and a half from Monroe, Ruston, which has a pretty good population, mm-hmm. A lot of those people, from what I can tell, are in hunting clubs and leases, right? And their family's been in these leases for years. And I'm not saying that people don't hunt the public land, because they do, because they got places like Wham Break where they line up. But you could go to somewhere like the Upper Ouachita, and at times, even if the water, you know, sometimes you pull up on there right when the water's coming up, and, you know, they'll be lined up ready to hunt it. And it may have changed now, right? It's been a few years. You could kind of get away from people, and you could kind of, you know, it felt like there was more room.
To breathe.
Yeah, like, and I know there's holes that people go to every year, and they hunt in these holes, but you could actually get off and maybe find you a ridge that was flooded, or as far as, like, the duck stuff. And I hunted Pheasanthal with a guy, and that was a whole nother world. I mean, that was...
Yeah, Pheasanthal is well-known for waterfowl hunting in the industry.
And
you know?
I went to a place called The Overflow with an old man that I hunted with, that I worked with.
What's that about? I've never heard of that.
So it's a small Arkansas WMA. just north of Bastrop Marooch. I forget the name of the actual town, but it's all around it is cornfields and rice fields and everything like this. And it's a block of woods with a bayou running through the middle of it. They got culverts. And what they'll do is, after the first split, they'll lift the dam, they'll open up the valves on this place, and they'll flood this whole place, right? Wow. And it is, like when you watch TV and people are on the White River and all this, I mean, it looks just like that. It is a Oak Ridge, maybe
two ag
all around it. So I tell you, this is my favorite story of hunting. So this guy's telling me about it. This guy duck hunted a lot. He hunted pheasant thaw, but mm-hmm. all these young guys I worked with, like, man, we don't know where he goes. Like,
yeah.
After the first split, like, he just takes off. We never see him again, and he kills birds. Yeah. I mean, this man was 57, 58 years old.
God knows where he's going or what he's doing.
And he would just take off, so I would work with him. He was on a shift with me, and one day we're just talking, and he said, you want to go duck hunting? Because I never would ask anybody, you know, if they wanted to invite me, I would go, right?
Yeah, correct.
He said, you want to go? I said, well, yeah, I'll come with you. He said, well, meet me at a little gas station. He said, meet me at like 1 o'clock in the morning. I said, good God, where are we going, right? So I get up there.
That's late for us, Jack.
And we pull up, and this guy's got like a 14-foot with a 20 on the back of it. I mean, his boat looks like it's held together with bubble gum and duct tape, Will. Right?
Yeah.
And we take off, and he doesn't tell me where we're going. We get past pheasant thaw, because that's where I thought we were going.
Did he blindfold
in that direction?
You?
No, he didn't blindfold.
All right, he was good.
We pull up, and we pull up to this ditch. I said, where are we at? He said, we're at the overflow. I said, I never heard of this. He said, well, you heard about it today. So we pull up, we take off. We get to this ridge, and it's probably 5 or 6 old men.
So y'all walking into?
No, we drove.
You drove the boat.
Drove the outboard, right?
Okay.
We park in this spot, and there's 5 or 6 old men, and he pulls up, said, "Man, you're running late." He said, "Yeah, youngster couldn't get there early enough," and it was all his fault, right? And he's a nice guy, so we pull up, so we load everything in 2 boats. We leave them boats where they're at, and we take off. And I couldn't tell you how to get there.
So y'all, all the whole group of guys, got in the boat. So yeah. Y'all were meeting up with some other.
Yeah,
guys.
And I didn't even know that. I thought it was me and him hunting.
Holy hell!
Had one of the most I've never had a hunt like that ever. I mean, it was duck hunting in the timber, cold. You know, you're in knee deep water, thigh deep water, maybe.
Like you see on TV.
No, we had a half dozen decoys and kick water.
Really?
Which you did.
Yeah.
And we killed, you know, probably 3 or 4 man limit, which they weren't
excited
about, right? There was like another day for them.
You were pumped up.
It was, we had 2 dogs. I mean, these guys, they've been doing it forever, right?
Yeah.
They had tree stands for their dogs they were sitting on. Like they...
Something you don't see here in Louisiana.
No, it was a whole different experience. And then I hunted in Texas a little bit with a few guys.
Now, what part of Texas is that?
This was down in South Texas.
South Texas. Okay, so how's that compared to Louisiana?
That's like marsh hunting in Louisiana.
Is it?
I mean, the bottom's a lot better because it's sandier.
Okay.
But you shoot a lot of teal, widgeon, pintail, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's all stuff. I got a friend of mine that I grew up hunting with from Ville Platte that we hunted. Well, I was out my when I was in high school and in the college, my first kind of little group of guys we hunted with, John. And John has now moved to East Texas.
Okay.
And he bought him a duck boat this year. And John's always been an outdoorsman, but he got him a brand new setup this year. And he has been duck hunting Southeast Texas. And it looks like South Louisiana, like the marshes of South Louisiana, it looks like, you know?
The grass is different. It's more like a sawgrass, I guess you would say.
Okay.
I mean, it just looks different, right? It's more like a torpedo grass looking.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Not that sawgrass that cuts your hand, kind of, whenever you grab it.
They called it something. I can't remember. And it smelled different, right? I can't just remember the smell. It had a distinct smell of
it. Is it hard bottom marshes? Is it soft Louisiana?
It's a lot of sand bottom.
So, okay,
there's a lot of mud. I mean, you have nowhere to walk.
But you got a hard sandy bottom.
But you do have a lot of hard sandy bottom.
Yeah. So how was that? What were some of the experiences there in Texas?
So that was, how to explain that? It's a lot like Louisiana. There was a lot of people that hunted down there. You got a big population, right? You're not too far from, and I say South Texas, it was
it wasn't all the way at the bottom.
You're not right? Galveston, that area. None of that.
No, I lived around Galveston, so I was past Galveston.
You were past Galveston.
That's where we went. We went, like, Matagorda back that way.
Okay, yeah,
so,
yeah.
I say South Texas. It's probably South Central.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
so, are y'all hunting public land? Is that WMAs?
It's just considered public land.
Public land.
Yeah, like state-owned land.
Gotcha.
And it reminded me of Louisiana. You had a lot of guys that was out there hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was, you had a lot of guys that would hunt the afternoons because it was open all day. Kind of like Venice.
Oh, yeah.
You can hunt like...
Yeah, yeah. We have a couple of wildlife management areas like that.
So it kind of kept the pressure off of it, but you always had somebody in there hunting. It mm-hmm. was fun. I wouldn't say I would want to do that every day.
Yeah.
That wasn't my thing. I'm not a big marsh guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you like the woods.
I like to hunt the woods.
Yeah, yeah. You like the
town. I'd rather kill 3 wood ducks than
go after. Yeah,
and hunting the marsh all day. I mean, I'm not knocking it. It's just not.
Yeah, that's not your jam.
Yeah, it's like going to Venice. I've been to Venice a handful of times. It's fun. You're gonna shoot. You know, the times I've been, I don't particularly think that I'm not gonna drive down to Venice tomorrow and say we're going duck hunting all year.
Yeah, like, correct. Hey, and guys listening are gonna say, man, y'all absolutely insane. That's why you don't kill no ducks. And you don't, you know, hey, look, everybody has their favorite type of hunting, I think. You know, and I'm talking specifically within waterfowl hunting. You know, I'm with you. I kind of like the timber because I grew up in the timber. Well, I grew up in the rice fields, actually. That's where I grew up hunting for the majority. It wasn't really even in the timber. We eventually moved. I started hunting. We had got a camp up at Dewey Wills. In Catahoula and mm-hmm. Dewey Wills, all that area. And I started timber hunting at Dewey Wills, got into that. And once I got into that, I was kind of like, man, I really like this a lot, you know?
It's just, I find it to be more interesting.
It is.
You know, when it's on. Right?
I say that it is. But I also now, since I live in South Louisiana, below I-10, I love marsh hunting too. It's a love-hate relationship, you know, sometimes, but I love it. I do. There's nothing cooler than shooting, those big gadwall. Let me say that first of all. I love gadwall and the marsh and the salt marshes. But I like the variety that you get because you get so many different species in the marsh.
I get that.
Cool. I like that. I like not knowing what I'm going to kill necessarily, you know? So, you know, that's the main point I like about the marsh, you know?
Yeah.
Tired of looking for that perfect hunting or fishing boat only to see that it's out of stock at your nearest dealer? Well, welcome to Game Changer Boats. We specialize in custom aluminum hunting and fishing boats. If you can dream it, Game Changer Boats can build it. Top quality craftsmanship and attention to detail is what we guarantee our customers, and we are proudly built right here in Louisiana. You can visit us on Facebook at Game Changer Boats, or email us directly at gamechangerboats@yahoo.com. Contact Game Changer Boats and let's see what we can build for you. Guys, let's talk fishing for a minute. When you're looking for bait and tackle for all your fishing needs, look no further than Benoit's Performance Baits. Benoit's Performance Baits offer some of the best soft plastics for bass, sacculet, and saltwater species. Rather it's a day on the water or trying to catch a mess of fish for a family fish fry or a heavy bag to win a tournament, Benoit's Performance Baits has what you need and what the fish want. You can visit us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok to place your order today with Benoit's Performance Baits.